Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. The guest we have right here is Dr. Ruth Ann Lobos, lead veterinarian at Merrick Pet Care. If you're thinking, name sounds kind of familiar, it should if you listen to our petcast at WGNradio.com. We'll talk about that in a bit. But it's that time. It's that time where the kids are going back to school, whether they be young kids that are perhaps going back to school or kids maybe going back to high school. And you're offended because I called them kids, even though they're in high school. It doesn't matter to your pets. Your pets are saying, what's going on? And that's true for dogs and cats. A change can be disruptive. So how do we make that change easy or as easy as possible for the cat, for our pets? Dr. Lobos, that's where we begin, I guess. You know, when the pandemic began, I don't believe, maybe I'm wrong, that anyone sent our dogs or cats an email saying, okay, for the next 18 months, everybody's going to be home all the time. Now, it's going to be nobody is home any of the time, kind of like it used to be. How do we help our pets to adjust?
Yeah, so there's about 70% of businesses are welcoming employees back to the office. And like you mentioned, kids are going back to school. Schedules and calendars are starting to fill up. And there hasn't been the global P-mail that has been left at the fire hydrants around the neighborhood to let our pets know. So I am a big fan of what I like to call the three P's. So it's planning, practice, and then patience. So our pets are so good at anticipating what is going to happen by watching our body language, reading our behaviors. We are creatures of habit. My husband would argue that I am like just a ridiculous creature of habit and so stuck to my routine. So our pets get into that routine and then they'll start to pick up on changes. So I think a good idea is to start practicing your new routine now. So get up, get dressed like you're going to the office and bringing the kids to school and all of that in the morning and physically leave the house for 10 or so minutes. Come back and see how your pet does. And gradually over time, make those little trips longer, maybe 15 minutes or 20 minutes, and do them multiple times throughout the day so your pet gets used to being alone because they have been so attached to us and used to us having the, you know, having us around the house. And so by kind of gradually building in what our normal or return to quote unquote normal will look like, we can help to actually ease them into that new routine and just make it easier on them and on us.
You said, see how your pet does. How do you know how your pet does if you're not there?
Yeah, it's a good question. So one is if they do start to show signs of anxiety, so things like chewing or barking. If you're in an apartment complex, your neighbors may say, hey, I can hear them barking through the wall. There's also, you know, in this day and age of electronics and connectivity, there's all kinds of apps that you can have on your phone with interactive cameras so you could see how they're doing.
And those cameras are now, I mean, if we were to have done this interview 5 years ago, those cameras were pretty expensive, but now they're not.
Yeah, they are. I mean, obviously, everybody has a different price point and ability to do that. But
I think you can get one for $20 or less.
Yeah, they're pretty affordable. And I think that is a really nice way to at least have an idea of what is happening at home when you're not there, rather than being, you know, what in the old days when you used to just come home and the pillows were shredded and, you know, the trash had been knocked over and you're like, what happened when I was gone?
Okay,
now we can know.
So let's say you do get a camera.
Yeah.
And get a camera, only one camera. Where do you point the camera to? Should it be the door that you left the house from?
I mean, sure, that would make sense, because then you'll know if there are, is, you know, is the dog constantly running there? Is the cat pawing at the door, like, you know, saying, hey, anybody coming back? Anything like that? And it really also depends on how your pet best responds to being gone. Some, you know, some dogs and even some cats like to have more of a confined space. What I like to say is it helps to make good decisions. So it takes the temptation of, you know, wandering around the house and finding trash cans or things like that if they either are confined to, say, their crate or to one specific living space in the house.
Such as the kitchen and you have a baby gate up or some such thing, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, you're talking about crate training in essence. And I paused there because some dogs with true separation anxiety don't do well with crates. But let's get to that in a minute because I want to talk about that video that we took.
Yeah.
So you see the pillow being torn up and the trash can being knocked over as you described. And you're thinking, oh my gosh, my dog has separation anxiety. The other great thing about these videos is that showing you a professional the video, you might look at it and say, actually, your dog's just having a good time tearing up the trash and ripping up the pillow. And there's no anxiety here. It's just that your dog may never have been taught to be home alone, maybe under-exercised and needs more of an outlet, or just is simply bored out of his or her mind and having a good time doing it. And the next thing the dog will do is call friends for a pizza party. Who knows? So that's not separation anxiety.
Right, exactly. And there is a big difference. And, you know, so it is, you know, are they, like you said, are they bored? Can we use food puzzles or other toys that engage their minds? Because we have some data that shows, you know, 10 to 15 minutes of mental exercise equates to about physical exercise of walking a mile or two.
Mm-hmm.
So if they can get their, like, mental wiggles out or actually their physical wiggles out, and by you understanding the difference in their behaviors of, hey, I'm bored or I'm under-exercised versus I'm stressed, you know, will help to build a great plan to kind of manage this return to, quote unquote, away from home schedule.
So the question is, actually, I have two here. So, okay, what if the dog is anxious? And how in the world can you tell if a cat is anxious? Do cats actually suffer from separation anxiety? We'll answer those questions when we come back, right here on WGN. Dr. Ruth Ann Lobos, lead veterinarian at Merrick Pet Care, is right here in the studio. That in of itself is very cool. So welcome. This is wonderful to have a guest. Nothing wrong with talking to you or any of the other guests by telephone, but it's been a while.
Yes, it has.
Since for this show, we've had anyone in studio, you know? And that's just wonderful, I think. We also do something called the Petcast. You can go to WGNradio.com. It's a podcast for pet lovers. You're a frequent guest on those petcasts. And the idea is to inform you about topics that will impact you, that you care about. And we've talked about all sorts of different things. We had a veterinary, we're talking in part anyway today about separation anxiety. Lisa Radasta is a veterinary behaviorist, and the current petcast at WGNradio.com has Dr. Radasta and myself talking about that. You and I spoke about a topic that I got a lot of feedback on, and you wouldn't think. And it's hydration in cats.
Sure.
I mean, but you wouldn't think of all topics to get a lot of feedback on, but I did. Because people don't know what to do if their cat isn't drinking. How much do cats need to drink? How can you motivate them to drink more? And at what point might they, if it's possible, be drinking too much? All of that and much more is at WGNradio.com. That's an important topic, I think, that people don't think about a lot. And that is because they're presumed to be desert creatures, or at least from a long time ago, millions of years ago. But it's more complicated than that, isn't it?
Oh, yes. It is. It's an extremely complicated topic that that could be the next episode for us.
And in fact, you know, the other thing related to that is kidney disease. There aren't many cats who reach the age of 14, 15, or 16 and don't have some kidney disease or kidney insufficiency going on. It's and then the veterinarian says, tell your cat to drink more. Well, okay. How do you do that? Okay, you can tell your cat to do it, but how do you make it happen, you know? So we talk about all of that and much more. Speaking of cats, separation anxiety. We're talking about going back to school, going back to work, and the pets don't know what's about to happen. Well, cats are not really good at change, and it was thought for a long time dogs have separation anxiety, potentially. Cats, they don't have it, but that's not true.
No, I mean, I think that they, you know, if the pandemic has shown us anything, it has shown us just the importance of that human-animal bond. And the being at home has given us that opportunity to really understand pet behavior at a more in-depth, upfront, front row seat level, because we've been there all the time. And our cats, while they are, most people would say a little bit more solitary or removed, they still do very much crave human interaction. And they are creatures of habit, just like our dogs are and just like us. So
I would argue even more than our dogs and way more than us.
Sure, sure. And so when we have been home and now we're going to start going back to the office or going back to school, they may suffer from, you know, I almost, and I have no data to support this, but I think that because they, I can see cats being more emotionally affected by the change in routine and having that anxiety and maybe even becoming a little depressed. So signs to look for, you know, cats will oftentimes show signs of anxiety by over-grooming themselves. That can certainly be a sign. Even getting more and more isolated. So if normally, you know, at night when you're going to bed, they hop up and they sleep, you know, I think a lot of cats, for whatever reason, like to sleep on our heads. And suddenly they're not doing that. Or, yeah, you know, when you're sitting on the sofa watching your live, you know, streaming whatever shows, and they start to pull away more because they're trying to kind of almost protect themselves from, you know, getting hurt more because they're not sure if you're going to be home. So it is important to, again, practice those routines and leaving and coming back to the house in those shorter time periods. So they start to learn that when you leave, you will come back and it'll be okay. And you'll still have those snuggles and all of that. And I think that's another key point is in this day and age when we are bombarded by social media and the TV and everything is like 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And now we're going to start to kind of get back to all of those games and practices and work meetings after hours and all of that to make sure that you schedule a play date with your pet, separated from all of your electronics and other distractions, and really just have that one-on-one time with your cat or your dog. And I think that's really important to have that still scheduled block of time for our four-leggeds.
So something you know a lot about is exercise. is that kind of a stress buster potentially for our pets?
Oh, absolutely. We've got good data that shows it releases the positive hormones, the feel goods, for ourselves as well as for our pets. And so it's not only a good way to get out their physical wiggles, but also to have that endorphin release for them. They are able to, you know, go out and read the P-mail on the corners if you take your dogs for walks or your cats. You know, people do take their cats for walks.
Yeah.
It's a thing. Or even just playing games with them, you know, whether that's fetch or chase the feather on a string or, you know, go through this maze box that I built with the Amazon boxes that have been delivered and are piling up in my garage. You know, anything like that can help to not only get their physical wiggles out, but also help to tire out their brain.
All right. So if the dog or the cat has some separation distress, or let me back up one step. If you think they do, and if you have set up the camera, should you show the veterinarian first what you see, you know, the video that you see, either by now you could email it to your veterinarian,
sure,
right? You know, so, or with a cat, you may not see anything because the cat might be hiding more, as you allude to. So then report what's going on. But in any which case, talk to a veterinary professional first, because I think anyway, separation anxiety, I mean, I don't think I would get up one morning and say, my pet is diabetic. You know, you don't self-diagnose that, you know, for your pet.
Right.
And I think separation anxiety is the same.
Yeah, I would agree. I think having that conversation with your veterinarian, and they can let you know, to your point earlier, you know, is this behavior, does it look like anxiety? Does it look like, hey, I'm having so much fun, and actually, if you just let me have another outlet for my energy, then I wouldn't destroy your pillows.
Right.
And so they can help kind of guide that, and also can let you know, because something that may look like anxiety to a layperson may actually be indicating another more serious condition. And so having that physical exam by a veterinarian as well as that conversation can help to hone in on what your specific pet needs.
You know, one great thing, and there are so many great things, you're going to get a commercial here, but it's true, and I do this. So for Merrick, is that you have so many different products, essentially the same, but they're branded a bit differently, you know, like Thanksgiving dinner for pets, you know, that kind of thing. Open up a can of that if your pet really likes it, and most dogs or cats do, and leave that in different places when you're not there. And that could be a test to see, first of all, if the pet does have that much anxiety, the dog or cat's just not going to eat it no matter how good it is. I mean, you could leave out sausages, you could leave out hot dogs, you could leave out for cats tuna or salmon, and they're just not going to eat it if they're that anxious. So that's all kind of a good test as well. But in addition, if they're either mildly anxious or have no anxiety, giving them something to do is not a bad thing. So leaving the product in food puzzles in different places so they have to, quote, unquote, hunt for it, I think is a great idea.
Yeah, for sure. And again, it allows, gives them something to do while you're gone, and it provides them nutrition at the same time. So it's kind of,
a win-win. Yeah.
And I would say that, you know, when we're offering or you're trying out these new things to do when you're gone, it's important to do and practice them while you're there, because again, every dog and cat is different, and you know, no matter what it says on the label as indestructible, I can guarantee
you're talking about the toys.
Yeah,
not
the toy.
Food.
Right. Yeah, yes. Yeah. That I can guarantee there's a dog out there or a cat out there who has destroyed whatever is quote unquote labeled as indestructible. So it's really important that the toys or the food puzzles or whatever it is that you leave out there have been tested under supervision of your specific pet. And so that way they can enjoy it safely and exercise their brain in a good way.
You know, I'm told we only have 1 minute now. So I know
time
went
so
by.
Fast.
I know, even for me. And I mean, so if you have one sort of last minute tip, what would that be?
Yeah, so I would go back to those three P's of planning, practice, and patience. So plan ahead of time, practice how your routine is going to go so your pet can get eased in there, and then have patience. It's not going to be perfect the first time or the second or maybe even the third. So have a little bit of grace for you and your pet. And if you're if you're struggling, definitely talk to your veterinarian about your specific pet's issues.
Merrick Pet Care Petcast, heard at WGNRadio.com. I love doing those. it's a whole lot of fun, and the feedback has been great. Good information that, you know, frankly, we don't have time on the radio to talk about everything, so this is a way to do that. That is at WGNRadio.com. You are Dr. Ruth Ann Lobos, lead veterinarian at Merrick Pet Care. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Steve.
I don't know why it is, but people are still leaving dogs in hot cars. I don't understand it. And PETA keeps track of these things. And in 2020, 2021, we're now up to approximately 60 dogs reported. Reported. I don't know how many unreported that have died in hot cars. I don't know that people don't understand exactly here that dogs can't handle. They can't. The heat as well as we can. That's because we're humans and they're dogs. That's one issue. And the other issue is just how hot the cars can get. So if you're sitting in a hot car, and let's say the person who you're with runs into a convenience store, you either, if it's 85 or 90 degrees outside, you're going to leave on the air conditioning. You're going to roll up the windows, and then it gets so hot that you're going to open a door. Or you're going to get outside the car. But dogs don't have choices like that. And again, they don't handle the heat anywhere near as well as we do. Heat stroke in dogs is a real deal, and it's because of the weather we've been having. It seems to be happening anecdotally more often around the country, including Chicago, than in previous years. So here's what happened. My producer of the national radio show I do said, why don't you try it, Steve? Go into a hot car and make like a dog. So I did. I wore my wife's fake fur coat. I put on some gloves. I put on a winter hat. It was about 82 degrees out, so it wasn't scorching outside. We were on the roof, meaning three floors up of the parking area of the Anti-Cruelty Society of Chicago. There was a gentle, nice, cool breeze off of Lake Michigan. And still, you'll see when you watch the video how hot the car got. Check it out on my website, stevedale.tv. In the search, just type in Steve Dale in a hot car, go to YouTube. You can find it there in a search as well. Next week on the show, good news and bad news about feline infectious peritonitis, or FIP. It's a disease that cats get from the feline coronavirus. The good news is people cannot get the feline coronavirus. So don't worry about that. That's been around for a very long time. No person has ever gotten the feline coronavirus. And cats actually don't generally get sick from it. And what it can do inside the cat, it can turn into an immune-mediated disease we call feline infectious peritonitis, which always was thought to be incurable, fatal. Well, it's not anymore. And you think that's great news. And it is great news. But it's kind of mixed news, as Dr. Julie Levy, who is really an amazing, amazing veterinarian, will be here next week to talk about and explain for all of us right here on Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. We'll talk to you next week, bright and early.